The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Okay. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
Yeah.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that soft stuff. None of that heavy metal stuff. Just a little bit of jazz.
Okay.
What do you think?
Just
I
like
love
that.
It. That was great. Thank you.
All right. Welcome. Welcome to a Friday. That's the good news. It's Friday. The good news is the Senate or the Senate Judiciary Committee's confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson are over. So we don't have to listen to those horrific Republicans who are just nasty, horrible, ugly people demean this brilliant woman anymore. I've had enough of that. And thank the gods, Joe Manchin today said, I'll vote for her. So, you know, the gods have spoken. Or the, I don't know what to call him, the keeper of the Democratic Party decision-making. Yeah, boy. Next November, do we ever need to elect more Democrats to the Senate so that Joe Manchin is rendered inconsequential? Because I don't want his opinion, his vote, to be pivotal. I don't want him having that kind of power. And if we had two more progressive Democrats in the Senate, then things would be wholly different right now, because you wouldn't have had Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema be able to hold up the agenda of the party. But that's what those two did, and thereby, you know, diminished this president's popularity, hurting the Democrats' chances of retaining the majority in both houses of Congress after the midterms. We can lay it all at their feet. So while I'm not advocating getting rid of either of them, and neither one of them are up for re-election this November anyway, we do need to elect more Democrats into the Senate so that they are an afterthought. Right now, they have way too much power. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. Couple of things. First of all, it's Friday. I post on Facebook because I've got friends on Facebook, and I promote the show that way. I promote the painting that way. And I noticed 1 year ago today, I got my second COVID vaccination. You know, it's a two-part. The first shot is the two-parter. And it was 1 year ago today that I got the second shot. And, you know, I got the Modernas for the first three, and it knocked me out every time. I did have a reaction, which only leads me to believe that if I got sick, I'd get really sick, because I was, you know, out of commission for a day and a half. Well, today, not realizing that today was the one-year anniversary, about 3 hours ago, I went and got my booster number four. Because you know what? People are very cavalier now. And down here in Florida, I walk into a store and it's like me and one other person wearing a mask. And we saw Hillary or Bill Clinton? One of them was diagnosed with COVID. Jen Psaki was diagnosed with COVID. People are letting their guard down and more people are getting infected. I don't want to get infected. Again, as a lung cancer survivor, anything that attacks the lungs scares me. I've got one good lung. There's like a quarter of my left lung is still intact. So, yeah, so I'm taking precautions. So today I got the Pfizer though, because you know they said you can mix and match, and I figure I'm covered with the Moderna. Let me get whatever protections Pfizer might offer that Moderna doesn't. Technically, they will not give you a fourth shot. unless you are immunocompromised. They didn't even question me today. But I would have told them the same thing. Look, I'm a lung cancer survivor and I can't risk it. So anyway, if I'm not feeling the adverse effects, and I can talk David into it. He got shot today too. So, and if he's not, and he got the Moderna because he had gotten the Pfizer for the first three. So we'll see how we both feel. But I just saw that the Indigo Girls are playing in town tonight. They're actually at the Pompano Beach Amphitheater, which is the coolest venue down here. It's outside. It's about maybe a mile from the beach. So you got the nice sea breeze. They just put a tarp over the top of it. So if it should rain, at least there's some protection there. And it's a perfect size. It's a great little amphitheater. So I don't know how I missed that they were here. But anyway, so maybe we'll do that tonight. It all depends how we're feeling. This Sunday are the Oscars. Now, let me ask you, when's the last time you went to a movie theater? Because I haven't been to a movie theater in probably well over 2.5 years. But, you know, a lot of the movies that are nominated were available on various streaming services. And there are 10, I'm going to get to the good stuff in a minute. I just want to get this out of the way so we can go full bore into the legal stuff. There are 10 movies nominated for Best Picture. I've seen 5 of them. I saw Coda, Don't Look Up, King Richard, The Power of the Dog, and West Side Story. My choice for, I should do a drum roll, shouldn't I? My choice for Picture of the Year is Coda. Coda, I'm telling you, Coda. And my second choice is Don't Look Up, because I enjoyed that, but I don't think it'll win. Coda could win. I didn't see Belfast. I hear it's great. I didn't see Dune. I saw King Richard. It's kind of like movie of the week, you know, after school special, kind of about the Williams sisters. Licorice Pizza, I want to see, but too many people told me it was awful, so I'll wait for that to come for free on the streaming services. I saw Power of the Dog, didn't get it. And West Side Story, Steven Spielberg, you should have just stayed home. Leave the original. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Okay, so here's my segue. What is broke is the Supreme Court, and it needs fixing. Ketanji Brown Jackson will be a good addition to the court, but it won't fix anything because the Republicans took care of that. They fucked it all up. They stole, I'll say, 3 seats, and they installed people wholly unqualified for the position. But it's not only those 3, because look at who's sitting on the bench now. Go back to what year was Clarence Thomas nominated by Papa Doc Bush? Like a long time ago. Anyway, he should not be on the Supreme Court. He is ethically challenged, though as I learned over the course of the last few weeks, the ethics rules that govern every other judge in the nation doesn't apply to the Supreme Court. What the fuck? So you're saying the Supreme Court is allowed to be ethically challenged? Is allowed to be corrupt? Why is that? Because there's no one above them that can rule on it? I'm sorry, that needs to be fixed immediately. But there's so much today, and so I'm really glad Lisa Graves is our guest today. Lisa Graves will join us in about 20 minutes. You know what? I should pull up her actual bio because I always forget things. Lisa Graves was, hold on, let me see if I can get to the people, Lisa Graves. Okay. So she is now the executive director and editor-in-chief of a group called True North Research. They're on the web at truenorthresearch.org. She is, this is not showing me enough stuff. I pulled up the wrong site here. She ran the Center for Media and Democracy for years, and it's now sort of morphed into True North, where they do investigations. She's the one, through her work, who introduced us to the Koch brothers. With the Koch brothers, yes. To ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Committee, or whatever nonsense they call themselves, ALECExposed.org was her work. So this is the work that, Lisa Graves has been doing for years. But before she left her job in the government, she worked in a number of administrations. Well, during the Clinton administration under Attorney General Janet Reno, Lisa Graves was the Deputy Assistant Attorney General, again, under Janet Reno in the Clinton administration. Under Patrick Leahy, Senator, when he headed the Senate Judiciary Committee, she was the Chief Counsel for Nominations. So right there, you know that she is all, you know, she's all about this. What happened, what we watched for the first part of this week, well, for the last 4 days, the nomination to the Supreme Court. So there's so much to talk to her about. And then today, I just like an hour ago, and she's crazy busy. I mean, I haven't even been able to talk to her about what we're going to talk about tonight, just that she's coming on at 5:30 Eastern, which is 4:30 her time because Lisa is in Wisconsin. But what time was it? About 3 o'clock, I got an email from True North Research. And let me just read to you the beginning. It says, in the chaos of this week of confirmation hearings on Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's nomination to the Supreme Court, True North published two deep dive threads on Twitter, excuse me, that illuminate what's really going on behind the scenes of this fight. Both expose the dark money that has engulfed the right wing packing of the court for years. Sorry. And if you thought Clarence Thomas couldn't be more corrupted given yesterday's documented revelations about Ginny Thomas's texts to Mark Meadows urging that the 2020 election be overturned, you're in for a tweet, in for a treat. And then they say in parentheses, we'll have more to come on Ginny's record soon, too. And so then they link to two articles that are unspooled and expanded in these threads on Twitter. So follow True North Research on Twitter at It's True North, I-T-S, True North. And then just listen today and then go and read this stuff. But needless to say, Lisa's going to come ready for to talk about the work that they've done this week. And it's important work. But I want to start with, sorry, I've got the proverbial frog in my throat. I want to start with the story that broke last night about Ginny Thomas. Now, we had known, first of all, we've known for years that she is a right-wing activist. I had heard that she helped pay for the buses to go to the Capitol on January 6th. We learned just last week that she was indeed at the rally last week, but she said she left before they all stormed the Capitol. Sure. Well, probably she did because she knew what was coming. But last night, Bob Woodward and Bob Costas from The Washington Post and CBS, respectively, broke a new story. And boy, did they break a story. So I figured we'd listen to the CBS telling of what happened because we can. Take it away, Nora O'Donnell.
Of CBS News and Washington Post investigation. Tonight, our chief election and campaign correspondent Robert Costa and Bob Woodward have uncovered text messages between the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and President Trump's top aide, in which she repeatedly pushed to overturn the 2020 presidential election.
Uh-oh.
Here's CBS's Robert Costa.
The stunning text messages detail an extraordinary relationship between Ginny Thomas and then White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, just after then-President Trump started his fight to overturn the 2020 election results.
This is a major fraud on our nation.
You're a major fraud on
we
our nation.
The law to be used in a proper
oh,
manner.
Oh, shut up.
So we'll be going to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Oh.
The texts are among more than 2,000 messages Meadows provided to the January 6th committee. The first message from Thomas came the day before Joe Biden was declared the winner of the 2020 presidential election. Do not concede, she wrote.
Oh, my
God. It takes time for the army who is gathering for his back. Thomas urged Meadows to help the president stand firm. The majority knows Biden and the left is attempting the greatest heist of our history. The messages don't directly reference Justice Thomas.
But they do.
Or the Supreme Court.
Hold on.
But show how Ginny Thomas sought to guide the president's strategy to overturn the election, urging Meadows to make Trump's controversial attorney, Sidney Powell,
Hi.
The lead in the face. On November 24th, Meadows wrote Thomas, quote, "This is a fight of good versus evil."
Oh, please.
Thomas replied, "Thank you. Needed that. This plus a conversation with my best friend."
Oh, her best
now.
Friend.
It is
you know
unclear
her best
who
friend
Jenny
is.
Thomas
oh,
was
it was clear.
To.
It's quite
Supreme
clear.
Court Justice Clarence Thomas often refers to his wife this way.
I love being here with my bride, Virginia. Who's a gift from God and my totally best friend
oh,
in the whole world.
My best friend!
Ginny Thomas recently acknowledged she had attended President Trump's rally at the Ellipse prior to the attack, but says she left before Mr. Trump addressed the crowd. Ginny Thomas has publicly denied any conflict of interest between her activism and her husband's work. In the one case
of course
heard
she
by
has.
The court tied to the January 6th insurrection, they voted to release Trump White House records to the committee. There was only one dissent. Justice yeah. Clarence Thomas.
Mark yep. Meadows had no comment, though his attorney did confirm the content of the text messages. Ginny Thomas, she did not respond to multiple requests for comment today.
Shocker.
And Justice Thomas, who's been hospitalized in recent days with an infection, he also did not respond to a request for comment made through the Supreme Court.
Oh,
just extraordinary
oh, no.
reporting what you
oh,
found
no.
out. I understand also that Ginny Thomas had some comments about the vice president of the United States.
Indeed. Working with Bob Woodward, we found she said that this is the end of America. It feels like Vice President Pence was betraying her. She said he disgusted her. And we also see the committee now really paying attention to the relationship between a spouse of a justice and a member of the executive branch.
But it's still not clear what Justice Thomas knew.
And that raises the question, will Ginny Thomas be issued a subpoena by the January 6th
Ooh.
Committee? We'll be watching that in the coming days.
All right, Robert Costa, thank you.
Will
thank you.
Ginny Thomas be issued a subpoena? Probably not, but they should. by the way, just an aside, and I don't know the answer to this, but I've got to find the... Howie Klein tweeted out a couple hours ago, and I'm looking... quickly through his Twitter thing. the news broke this afternoon, of course, after I finished producing my What's News segment, in which I said Clarence Thomas is still in the hospital a week after he allegedly went in for flu-like symptoms. But he's totally fine. He's getting out tomorrow, right? And he was there for over a week, and nobody would comment on it. Well, Howie tweeted... there are unfounded rumors circulating that Clarence Thomas is not technically alive, but that he is being kept, quote, alive to prevent Biden from appointing a replacement. Has anybody seen Clarence Thomas since he's been released? Just asking, not saying there's any truth to the statement, just asking, because you never know. So I look forward to talking to Lisa Graves about that. I do want to get a couple of clips in from the hearings I'm not going to have time to play clips with Lisa because there's so much we need to cover in a half hour. So let me share a couple of moments with you that I haven't been able to get to yet on the program. Now, I mentioned, and I'm going to play the lengthy one first, because I watched this unfold as it happened live. And I was so impressed with Judge Jackson that I wanted to point this out. And this, you know, the Republicans went after her on a few cases of mostly of sentencing. But this one was different. This was a case called New York something. Let me see if I can find it. Here. Well, here's first Lindsey Graham beat her up on it. So he'll get into it. Here's the beginning of it. Lindsey going after her.
That's the only thing I ask you to do. You said just a bit ago that you apply the law and the facts and call them as you see them. Is that right?
Yeah. That is correct, Senator.
Okay, and you look at the statute as the way it's written, and you try to apply it in its plain meaning. Is that correct?
Yeah. That is correct, Senator.
Have you heard of a case called Make the Road versus
Make the Road New York. That's what it is.
Make the Road New York. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Make the Road in New York. Who are they?
Make the Road New York is a nonprofit that represents various individuals in the sort of immigration law field.
They're a nonprofit advocacy group for immigration issues. Did you know they received large donations from the Arabella Network and from George Soros's Open Society
George
Foundation?
Soros, oh my God, drink!
No. Okay. Well, they did. Now, in that case, what was the issue?
The issue in that case was challenge to a change in administration policy concerning expedited removal, which is a policy that Congress enacted in order to expedite certain removals in the immigration system.
Right. Ordinarily, to get people out of the country quickly.
Before expedited removal.
Asylum cases do not fall in this category, right?
Well,
trust me on that, because the statute says it doesn't.
He doesn't let her answer.
Who could otherwise be subject to expedited removal makes and has a credible fear of torture in their country. They can be.
And can they make that
determined?
Claim?
They can be determined.
Right.
To qualify for regular removal rather than expedited removal.
So expedited removal is a creature of Congress, folks. And if you've been here 2 years or less, the statute
that they passed that he's going to question, that he's going to
the statute
berate her
would allow
about
the administration in office to have expedited removal, avoiding a lot of the hurdles that would exist otherwise for people here 2 years or less. So in the Obama even Bush years, they did not look at it in terms of applying it to everybody. Some people coming by air got expedited removal, others didn't.
Okay.
The Trump administration decided to use the authority given to it by Congress to remove all eligible cases.
Here's the important part.
2 years or less under the expedited removal statute. Is that a fair summary?
Well, Senator, I would say it differently.
We'll say it differently.
All right. The statute that you've put up indicates that Congress is giving the department.
She's going through the technical minutiae of the case.
Determined.
And you'll hear he cuts her off. He doesn't want to hear what made her rule the way she did.
If you've 2 years or less.
Yeah, but importantly, the authority was, it was not Congress saying 2 years or less. What Congress said is you, agency, have the
DHS,
authority to
right?
determine what category of persons between who have been here between 0 and 24 months.
Which is 2 years.
Forgive me, Senator. I'm trying to explain is that the authority given to the agency was to determine what length
they
of time.
They had discretion to make that.
What length of time? It was not the authority to deport everyone who's been here for 24 months. It was the authority to determine what length of time a person has to be here in order to be subjected to expedited removal.
Here's what the statute said.
Okay, so now he's getting to, I should have started from here. Sorry, it's a long buildup, but I'm getting somewhere with this.
One and two of this subparagraph to any and all aliens described in subclass two as designated by the Attorney General, actually DHS, such designation shall be in the sole
Okay, here's the part.
Unreviewable discretion of the Attorney General and may be modified at any time.
So Congress gave...
Now, I've been in this business for quite a while.
The Attorney General and DHS sole authority.
What the Trump administration did was to use the discretion given to it by statute in a way different than prior administrations. This advocacy group, the Arabella supported advocacy group.
Okay. Now he's going off into a all right, I'm going to cut him off there because Lindsay rambles and he doesn't let her get another word in edgewise. But that's what Congress passed the statute giving the Attorney General and actually then Department of Homeland Security complete discretion to decide when I guess a detainee gets expedited release between 0 and 24 months. Okay. And then he cuts her off. He won't let her explain why she did not allow DHS or the Attorney General their own discretion to do this. And he berated her. All right. So that, but it's going to take another 5 minutes to get there. What I want to play for you is then, John Kennedy, the country lawyer from Louisiana, who's not a country lawyer, who does not have a Southern accent. He just put that affectation on once he was elected as a Republican senator from Louisiana. He used to be a Democrat, educated at Oxford, has no accent. So it's all bullshit. It's an act. But he decides to go after her to pick up where Miss Lindsay left off, and she schooled him.
CBS News and Washington Post.
Oh, that's the wrong one. Hold on. Wait a minute.
Campaign correspondent Robert Costa. And
wait
Bob
a minute.
Woodward
that's not it. Oh, don't tell me I recorded over. Oh, I see. Okay, I was playing the wrong clip. Here we go. Okay, so here's Kennedy. Phew.
To be mindful of this.
Okay.
I'll give you another example.
Okay, give us another example.
And this case bothers me. I want you to explain it.
It bothers him.
I think Lindsay talked to you about
Lindsay
it,
did. He beat you up on this.
I want to hear you explain
but
it.
I want to let
it's
you
make
explain.
The road New York versus McClellan.
Okay.
You remember that one.
I do.
Yeah. Here's the way I read it. Congress, we, in a
come on, spit it out.
gave DHS the sole and unreviewable, those are not my words, they're in the statute, the sole and unreviewable right to determine when illegal immigrants should be removed on an expedited basis.
Right.
The Department of Health, Homeland Security, taking this statute, decided to use its sole and unreviewable authority or discretion to state that we're going to have expedited removal of all illegal immigrants who've been in the U.S. less than 2 years.
Yeah.
And you said no.
And you said she said no.
And not only that, but you issued a universal injunction.
Yes, she did.
And I don't understand why. You talked about judicial activism. And I don't see how clear Congress could have been. Now, the D.C. Circuit reversed you, but I want to hear your reasons for issuing that nationwide injunction.
And she does.
Thank you, Senator,
she gives her reasons.
To,
she explains the whole case, which I don't have time to get into now because this is like an 8-minute clip. But what she explained was there was another statute that supersedes this new statute that Congress passed, giving them unbridled authority to make this call. And that governs all of these when an agency is given discretion to do so, to make a call like this, what governs them? And that provision, that statute, takes precedence over the newer statute. And so she said that the claim violated that first statute. And I think here's the part where the light bulb goes off in Kennedy and he realizes that what she's saying is valid.
Statutory interpretation that says that you should try to give effect to all of the will of Congress. You should try to read statutes so that they go together in a way.
Hello.
If you have these two directives. And there's also D.C. Circuit case law.
Judge, I got to stop you.
All right.
Because I got it.
I got
and,
it.
And,
listen.
And let me just say, I agree that the D.C. Circuit reversed me. They disagreed with my interpretation, and that's the way
that our system works.
Okay, now I got to tell you. So she just argued circles around Kennedy. She explained exactly why she did what she did. It was a legitimate explanation. I learned a whole lot from it. He did too. The circuit, the DC circuit, reversed her decision, which she said that's how it works. You know, I disagree with them. I think I made my case that this other statute was violated, and that's why I ruled as I did. And so he hears her out. He goes, I get it. I get it. And rather than say, you know, good job. That was a good explanation. Now it makes sense. Here's what he does.
Man, it's this last question.
And just know, they just spent 8 minutes on that. She explained the whole thing in great detail. And he says, okay, now let me ask this next question.
This is a question about based on your experience. Can we agree that I want to emphasize if.
Yeah.
Cocaine is cocaine.
What?
That crack cocaine is what? Equal in its danger to powdered cocaine.
What?
You with me?
No.
I think so.
One is not more dangerous than the other.
He just spent the last 10 minutes out of the 20 that he had in total on this case. She effectively explained it to his satisfaction. Does he say good job? No. In the minute he has left, and literally he has 1 minute left, he asks her about the difference between crack cocaine and powder cocaine. This is the problem with them. She gave a perfect explanation. He understood it. Does he say good job? Does he say, that now it makes sense. Thank you so much, Judge. Now I got it. No, he's like, okay, now I'm going to ask you about crack cocaine. And then this is how it ends.
It's view that they should be equivalent and lobbied Congress concerning that. And Congress made a determination about, in the policy realm, making it 18-1 instead of 100-1, which is what it had previously been.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
And that's how he ends his question. She answered the question about the crack cocaine because she answered every question to the best of her ability, knowing that she can't comment on pending cases or cases that may come before the court or policy. Because she doesn't make policy, she interprets the law as it relates to the Constitution. Period. Man, she was good. And those Republicans just sucked out loud. Just an embarrassment. Everything about it was an embarrassment. God, I was going to play the Ted Cruz. I'm going to play one. I think I played this yesterday, but I'm going to play it again anyway because it's so offensive. Ted Cruz is offensive. You know, Dick Nose Cruz. Listen
able
to this.
To comment on them.
Okay, if I can change my gender, if I can be a woman, and then an hour
you
later
can't.
If I decide I'm not a woman anymore, I guess I would lose Article 3 standing.
Okay, you see, that's not how it works, you fucking idiot. So he's starting from a false premise that he made up because he's a fucking moron. You know what? I don't need to play that anymore. What I can do is play this little song because I've decided... let me finish playing it so you know why he gets the song.
Tell me, does that same principle apply to other protected characteristics? For example, I'm an Hispanic man. Could I decide I was an Asian man?
Oh, fuck
would
you.
Would I have the ability to be an Asian man and challenge Harvard's discrimination because I made that decision?
Senator, I'm not able to answer your question. You're asking me about
hypotheticals.
And
I'm asking you how you would assess standing if I came in and said I have decided I identify as an Asian man.
I would assess standing the way I assess other legal issues, which is to listen to the arguments made by the parties, consider the relevant precedents and the constitutional principles involved, and make a determination.
Because she's
okay.
Good. Okay. And you know what, Ted Cruz? What I would assess from that is the fact that you are the world's biggest asshole.
Biggest asshole. Story about the brand new world's biggest asshole. It's a brand new story about the brand new world's biggest asshole. His name is
Ted Cruz,
and he's the new world's biggest asshole. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get Lisa Graves on the line, shall we? It's now. Oh, I'm even late. God. All right. I may have to run over a couple of minutes because, you know, we're calling Lisa. She just moved. Like, she already lived in Wisconsin. Hey, Lisa Graves. It's Nicole Sandler calling. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Nicole?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. What I know you're incredibly busy and it's a crazy busy time, but this is the perfect day for us to talk because True North Research just put out these two big stories on exactly what we're going to be talking about. So you've been busy around there, huh?
Yes, it's been a little busy. It's always good to hear your voice.
Well, it's always good, Nicole, to hear your voice, too. Now, you moved. You already lived in Wisconsin, but you moved further north because it just wasn't cold enough for you?
It was cold enough for me, but in fact, it's snowing right now.
Oh my God!
Outside my window, and so I've been seeing all these lovely pictures of spring in Florida and DC and flowers blooming, but I have snow flurries. So,
yeah, we've got a little bit of a cold snap going through here, and it's 77 degrees. That's chilly for us this time.
Yeah, we're probably 40 degrees colder than you right about now. Maybe more. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I'm in the great north.
You know, I was going to say something about, well, at least you're in Wisconsin, which is the birthplace of progressivism. It's a progressive state until I go, oh, wait, because the Wisconsin State Supreme Court just struck down the new district maps that were drawn by the Democratic governor of Wisconsin. What the hell?
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a per curiam opinion, meaning they didn't say who wrote it.
Oh, it was the U.S. Supreme Court. Sorry.
Yeah, struck down a decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which was actually a surprise decision because a judge who was elected, backed by some of the, you know, more right wing political players in the state, he voted with the other judges on that bench who are, you know, often described as more Democratic or, you know, coming from, you know, more progressive politics before they were judges. And so what had happened in Wisconsin was there was an effort by the right wing legislature, which, you know, had already sort of rigged the system back in 2011 with their redistricting to basically dominate this state. Even when in statewide elections, Democrats can win. Democrats like Barack Obama, our current governor, the attorney general, the secretary of state, those are all Democratic office holders here in Wisconsin. But the legislature is so gerrymandered that by that, you know, 2010 census, the aftermath of that, that the Republicans dominate the legislature. So what happened was those Republicans, you know, cut maps that were even more favorable to themselves. And the governor of the state, you know, cut a map that was, you know, much closer to the current map, which is already biased,
right?
But would be less biased than the worst one. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court sided with the governor, found that map was fair.
Okay.
And then the Republican legislators appealed to this Supreme Court, this packed Supreme Court, and they summarily basically overturned the ruling of the highest court in the state and put the map drawing back in the hands of the gerrymandered legislature in this state.
Oh my God. So it's the U.S. Supreme Court. It's the Supreme Court packed with Trump's three stolen justice seats.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So that makes it even worse. I got that wrong. So thank you for clarifying that. All the more reason we've got some problems at the Supreme Court. So, Lisa Graves, this week, I know you watched them. I watched the hearings. First of all, Judge Jackson is awesome. She is great. Everything about her, I love. And so it figures that the Republicans would treat her so horribly because that's what they do. Now, you at True North Research, you guys put out this information today about where those attacks came from.
Yes, it was it was a historic week in many ways, and I was really impressed with the candidate, with Judge Jackson, and her temperament in the face of these sorts of attacks. Just as you and I and your listeners remember how Brett Kavanaugh responded to testimony.
Oh yeah,
that he had attempted to sexually assault Christine Blasey Ford. He responded with such anger and attack, such an attack mode that even Justice Stevens, who was appointed to the Supreme Court by President Ford, said that he thought that Brett Kavanaugh utterly lacked the temperament to be entrusted with the job of being a judge. Now, here this week you had a judge, the nominee of President Biden, who was attacked with, you know, really in many ways very vile smears.
Horrible.
Smears that are sort of QAnon adjacent attacks on her. And she responded, you know, with just such calm and such poise. It was astonishing. I confess to you that I would not have been able to withstand that question.
Oh, God, me either.
Responding back to the nonsense.
Me either. And can I just say, I got to play this. I'm going to play one short clip for you. It was I played a longer one before with Ted Cruz. This is the one point where I thought she was about to, she was at a crossroads. It's like, okay, either I tell this fucker what I think of him and blow everything up, or I sit here and I bite my tongue. But it was this moment, this happened.
They recommend the babies confess when being racist. Now, this is a book that is taught at Georgetown Day School to students in pre-K through second grade, so 4 through 7 years old. Do you agree with this book that is being taught with kids that, that babies are racist?
And here's what she said.
Senator...
And this is the pause when I envisioned all that going through her mind.
I do not believe that any child should be made to feel as though they are racist or though they are.
Okay, so that's enough. But that pause that went on, it felt like forever, but it was like 5 seconds, which is an eternity in terms of a pause.
Yeah, I have to say that I'm gonna try to encourage myself to take that 5 second pause, the Judge Jackson pause, next time I'm provoked by some sort of right wing screed or the line of questioning that Senator Cruz concocted, which was genuinely absurd. I was so impressed with her. patience, and also the way she described the law, and she described her process for deciding cases. And I think that Congresswoman Beatty, at the end of the hearings yesterday, really spoke for many people who admire Judge Jackson when she said she's imperfect, but she's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. I mean, no one is perfect. There's always going to be cases where judges are reversed. There'll be cases where, you know, one side thought they should have won and the other side won. But overall, her record among judges from, you know, were appointed from both sides of the aisle, along with law enforcement and public defenders, you know, people from sort of every vantage point other than these Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee, two of whom should not even be sitting senators with their role in really fomenting the effort to overturn other than that group of these right-wing senators and the right-wing groups that back them, people who know her and know her record think that she will be a fair judge. And I think that the other thing that confounds them is that she actually is not an ideologue like they are. And so they ask things like, you know, what do you think? That's my dog in the back.
Oh, that's okay.
What do you think about this decision involving, a contraception, access to IUDs for people who have who get insurance under the Affordable Care Act? And she basically was saying that she's not following that case. She's, you know, sitting as a judge. She's hearing other cases. She's not embroiled in this right wing culture war stuff the way these senators are and the groups that back them are. Mm-hmm. And so they sort of acted like she was disingenuous. I actually took it to mean that she's actually not, you know, involved in those issues. You know, she's doing her job.
Right.
And I think what people need in a judge is a fair judge. What we need on the court are fair judges. What we don't have on the Supreme Court with some of these appointments by Trump and others are fair judges. We have judges who are basically in the tank, like Clarence Thomas, who are sort of sure bets for the right-wing extremists in this country.
Yeah, most definitely. But a report that you put out, True North Research put out today, talks about The Independent Women's Law Center. I get emails from these people, and they're nuts. But this was a concerted, big dark money effort to come up with a line of attack for her. So what did they do? They centered in on a few of her sentencing rulings that they thought they would make a stink out of. Is that what happened?
Couple of lines of attack that were put forward by the Republicans, and there was certainly some competition among these right-wing groups about, you know, which tactic to take with this nominee. And this group, the Independent Women's Law Center, which is really sort of a subset of this thing called the Independent Women's Forum, which is a group we've written a lot about because its leader has touted how people think of her group as neutral or independent because that's the name, independent,
right.
The people who know that they're really conservative, and so they can you know, reach people with their claims who might otherwise not be receptive. Anyway, that group, which has been funded by this same right-wing set of groups tied to this guy named Leonard Leo, mm-hmm. who has been at the point person on trying to pack the Supreme Court, capture the Supreme Court for the right wing, they put out a set of talking points to the Republican senators, and they urge them to, for example, to talk about prior nominees, two nominees in particular, this guy named Miguel Estrada and Janice Rogers Brown, who I could talk to you all day about if you want to one of these days, but we don't need to right now.
Okay.
So it's sort of like the reason I point that out is because it was such a specific reference to two specific past nominees. And what you could see in the hearing was Republicans basically repeating that talking point. Where did it come from? It came from this other, you know, from this right-wing dark money group that is, you know, plays the role of distaff, the role of, you know, putting a woman's face and voice on right wing, on the right wing agenda. And so we track that in our story, kind of the echoes of that. They also were trying to make these points about what they call judicial philosophy. And I just think Senator Whitehouse was so brilliant in so many ways at the hearing, as were so many of the other compelling, you know, statements made by Cory Booker and others. But Senator Whitehouse, you know, really said, like, this whole issue of, quote, judicial philosophy, it's like a mask that the right wing uses to pretend that they're neutral, when in fact what they're trying to do is freeze interpretation of the Constitution, you know, in time, in the distant past, and let it be held forever by, you know, the hands of dead white men,
right,
from, you know, 200 years ago, saying, you know, what your rights are. And I think that Judge Jackson, you know, really in a very calm and confident way said, you know, there's a lot of things in the Constitution, or there's a lot of things the Constitution talks about in terms of principles, but they don't talk about telephones or cell phones or plane, you know, air travel,
right?
Or, you know, like the world changes. And so this question of, does this provision apply to X or Y or Z? You know, these are real questions for a country that wants to have a Constitution that is relevant to the world we live in. And I think that the founding fathers, though they were, you know, flawed in many, many ways, were brilliant in other ways. And one of the things they did was they set forth principles, even though some of those principles they themselves could not abide by. And that was also the case with Congresses, like the 14th Amendment set forth the principle of equal protection of the law. Wow, like that's an amazing protection. But some of those same men allowed racially segregated schools in the District of Columbia. Does that mean we're stuck with racially segregated schools forever and ever? No, because the language chosen transcends the limits of the men who wrote them. You know,
yeah,
the language,
right,
is for ours to have and to apply to our lives. And I think she just really did a good job of explaining that. And I think that Senator Whitehouse, you know, really did a good job of saying this judicial philosophy thing is just a ruse to really try to give cover to this right wing agenda that is determined to roll back the rights of everyday Americans.
Right. And I hope people will subscribe to your Substack newsletter, because you lay this out beautifully. You explain all of this. And I got to tell you, today is the day that this all comes crashing together, because today, well, last night, the Washington Post and CBS break a story about Ginni Thomas. And we've long known that Clarence Thomas probably does not belong on the Supreme Court. We've known for years that his wife was a Republican, not just Republican, but you know, the crazy wing of the Republican Party, not that there's a part that isn't, but that she's been an activist and a, you know, a shit stirrer over there, to coin a phrase. And so last night we see that there's 27 text messages between Ginny Thomas and then Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows. And she's, you know, she's pushing for the overturning of a fair and free election. This is a big deal, right?
It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal. And I would say, I'll go farther than you and to say, I think it's quite clear that Clarence Thomas should not be on the Supreme Court.
Thank you.
And it's been quite clear for a long
time.
I share your sentiment. He never should have been confirmed.
Never.
And then things have happened subsequently have really revealed his lack of ethics, his, you know, his bias, his, you know, hostility to basic rights. One of the cases I think I remember well from law school, was a question about, in essence, whether the Eighth Amendment bars cruel and unusual punishment or cruel or unusual punishment.
God.
So this idea that if it was cruel, but it was usual, that's okay. But it was unusual, but not cruel, that's okay. It was just such a narrow. Anyway, he and Scalia really joined in some of these very narrow approaches to our rights and our Constitution, with a few limited exceptions. But the story that came out in CBS News and Washington Post yesterday was just jaw-dropping, because even though we knew that Ginny Thomas was very involved in politics and that she was in ways that I think were totally inappropriate,
yep,
for the spouse of a sitting justice on the Supreme Court, but it was worse. She was having there are 28 or 27 of these text messages or emails between her and Mark Meadows, but there's actually 6 weeks missing of that communication during a crucial moment around the insurrection, around the actual day of January 6th. But in the beginning of December, end of November, you see just this flurry of activity where she's just regularly contacting Mark Meadows, demanding that the election be set aside, demanding that they do anything they can to advance sort of her religious worldview of this president, of Trump's supposed role in Christendom. It's an astonishing, shocking display. And also, as you point out, the things she cites to Meadows are outlandish, completely debunked, absurd claims that no one in their right mind would believe.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the absurdity of trying to promote Sidney Powell, who, you know, was so terrible.
Horrible.
In the argument she made.
Even used the term release the Kraken. I mean,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and in fact, right, Ginny Thomas in one of those texts says release the Kraken. It's crazy. And I don't mean that like in a woman, like a woman is,
no.
I mean like this is
certifiable.
This is
right.
Yeah, this is not rational. This is these are the rantings of a sort of Trump cultist. And in one of those text messages or emails, she says that she feels better because she just talked to her best
yes.
friend. And in other settings, she's referred repeatedly to Clarence Thomas as her best friend.
And he, to her, has
yes.
publicly referred to her. So that's obviously a thing with them. So while the news reports say she doesn't explicitly mention Clarence Thomas, yes, she does right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think any reasonable reader, given the way she's used that phrase,
yep.
and he's used that phrase, would
yep.
know that it was him. And also,
yep.
this sort of punctures this lie that supposedly they don't talk about these things.
Right.
You know, first of all, during COVID, I'm sure they're at home together a lot. They're a married couple. They don't have kids.
Yep.
They're in that house together. She's obviously ranting and raving to Mark Meadows on a regular basis about the election. The idea that they're not talking about the election is absurd. And then you have the fact, as the news accounts reported, that Clarence Thomas was the only justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, including these right-wingers, and in an 8-1 decision to decide, if he were the one deciding, that all of the emails and materials that were being sought by the January 6th committee from the Trump administration and Trump people could not be turned over.
Right.
So basically, that his wife's communications, which he had to know about, with administration officials could not be turned over. I mean, it is a grotesque abuse of power. He should be impeached. He should be removed from office. If he had even a scintilla of integrity, he would resign.
Yep. And he won't. And, you know, and then there was the question of him being in the hospital all week. And, you know, Howie Klein, got to love Howie Klein. He's like, well, has anybody seen him yet? Because there are rumors that he's being kept alive by the Republicans who don't want Joe Biden to get another nominee.
Well, you know, I just saw a report today that he was discharged, but there was not a lot of transparency about what was happening there.
None at all.
But the thing that really struck me was that, you know, you folks might remember, and I know you know this very well. A couple weeks ago, Jenny Thomas basically did a preemptive strike with the media, which she gave an interview saying, oh, yeah, she was there on January 6th, but she left because it got cold.
Right. Sure.
And then she had also deleted her email, basically, or her Twitter photos kind of from that day, and one in particular that was basically promoting the faces of these people in the crowd, you know, from another source. And so, you know, they were trying to say, you know, to the public, oh, there's really nothing to see here. You know, I was only there for a brief time. Well, you know, now we know why that story came out. It was because they were getting questions about the fact that this material was out there, and they wanted to try to put their spin on it.
Wow.
The material is damning. It is also just simply grotesque to think about having this scenario where you have this man sitting on the Supreme Court ruling on cases involving the powers of Donald Trump, including the power of Donald Trump and his acolytes to withhold information from Congress, and yet his wife is instrumentally involved in those very activities, the activities to subvert a fair and free election, the activities to, you know, assail the decisions of these officials in these states, and this demand that Trump remain in power at any, you know, at all costs. And it's also wrapped in this view of this sort of religion of this idea that Trump is like divinely chosen and must remain in office in order to advance this religious objective. And Mark Meadows echoes that back to her, which is also super astonishing.
It's all astonishing. And to make matters even more curious, and I don't watch, I'm taking the word of people who are reporting on Twitter, Fox, not news, has not mentioned this whole story once today. But they've talked a lot about Hunter Biden. So go figure.
Yeah, I mean, Fox, which I never call news,
no.
Unless it's an actual local affiliate reporting
right.
sports scores, you know, it is so targeted on whatever really helps Trump and whatever helps the right wing, and it does not tell its viewers what's really happening in the world. It doesn't share information like this, and this is astonishing. And the other thing I'll say, and I hope folks can, you know, take a look at our newsletter on Substack, which is truenorthresearch.org, and it's on Substack. But one of the things we talk about is what the other thing that happened, which I think is huge news and is going to, you know, have reverberations, is that in the middle of this, right before this story breaks, what happens is the pivotal right-wing money group, the dark money group that is running ads attacking Judge Jackson, the group that ran ads backing Brett Kavanaugh, backing Amy Coney Barrett, backing Gorsuch, that group came out with a $1.5 million ad buy on Thursday, and the ad buy is promoting a film about Clarence Thomas, saying Judge Jackson, you know, doesn't know Clarence Thomas.
Oh, my.
About Clarence Thomas. And so it's a $1.5 million ad buy to try to persuade people supposedly to block Judge Jackson, but about how great Clarence Thomas is. And we know for a fact that Clarence Thomas, Jenny Thomas, and Leonard Leo, who is really at the center of this dark money operation to capture the courts, are super close friends.
Wow.
They go out to dinner together. Jenny's talked about how he's taught her about wine and good food. They're super close friends. They smoke cigars together. Like, they're buddies.
Wow.
And so basically Thomas's buddy and the groups that he controls just laid down $1.5 million to try to burnish the image of Clarence Thomas. As this story was, they had to know this story was about to break. That's my speculation.
Well, that's probably why they did it.
The timing is certainly suspicious.
Of course. Wow. Lisa Graves is with us. She is a you know, she's my legal go-to person. You were the chief counsel for nominations in the Senate Judiciary Committee under Patrick Leahy. So this is exactly the nominee for Supreme Court. This is what you would deal with, yes?
Yes, I didn't work on a Supreme Court nomination. I left to go work on some other national security issues before then, but I have been a long student of the Supreme Court nominations process, and I worked on the nomination or the evaluation of more than 200 federal judges.
Wow.
Between my time at the Justice Department and my time working as a staffer on the Senate Judiciary Committee as the chief counsel for nominations. So I have been looking at nominations issues since 1998, but actually I started looking in earnest way back in probably, I'll date myself, but I'll just say early 1990s.
Wow, I gotcha.
But from a working standpoint, you know, late 90s was
okay,
when I really started working on it.
All right, so this is not directly Supreme Court related, but kind of. I got to ask you, what is up with Merrick Garland? Now, Marcy Wheeler, just to give the other side, thinks that he's doing everything in its time. It takes time to get these prosecutions going. But I think the rest of us are going, what the hell? Do something. Where are you, Merrick Garland? What do you think? What's happening with Merrick Garland?
Well, you know, I think that he is a good person. I didn't know him personally when I was at Justice Department. He was put on the D.C. Circuit around the time I started working on nominations. He had a good reputation within the department as a, you know, a very solid prosecutor, you know, really knew the law, smart, fair-minded. He went on the bench. He had a reputation on the bench of being a very fair-minded judge. He was on the bench, you know, for, you know, almost 20 years, I think, before he was nominated by Barack Obama for the Supreme Court. And I think that he's a good person and he's well respected as a judge.
Right.
I don't think we need a judge in charge of the Justice Department.
No.
We need someone who is the nation's law enforcement officer who hasn't been away from these issues for 20 years as a judge.
Wow.
I think that he's a good man who should be a judge. I wish he was still on the D.C. Circuit. I would have chosen someone else for the Supreme Court had it been my choice, which it wasn't in 2016, not because he's a bad person, but just because I don't think he's the right person for the Supreme Court. But I do think that as the head of the Justice Department, I'm sure that he and his team are working hard on these issues, but there's a clock ticking.
Yes.
And we're about to be bombarded with this next election season with this, you know, rabid attacks on voting rights, with this, you know, lie machine that is in full gear about, you know, supposedly CRT is everywhere, which is just, you know, manufactured hype.
Yeah.
These attacks on
Insane.
Schools, this, you know, attacks on, you know, don't say gay. Like, we're in this, you know, moment where the right wing sort of culture warrior extremists are, you know, really being stoked by Fox, by Tucker, by these right wing, you know, outlets, you know, including Bannon's operation.
Yep.
And we have a Justice Department that is just moving, it appears, at a very slow pace.
Glacial.
And I don't think that, you know, justice should be rushed, but I don't think justice should be slow. You know?
Yeah. I mean, are we going to run up against like a statute of limitations, or we're going to run up against the end of this Congress and into the next Congress? Because January of 2023, who knows? It depends on what happens in November, but Republicans could take over the House, and then this investigation, the January 6th stuff, is over.
Well, and you also have a situation where you could see what happened in New York with that terrible
yes.
Switch in the district attorney's office, to have this guy come in, you know, from the outside and basically push aside the career experienced prosecutors who'd been investigating Donald Trump, shut down that investigation. I think that's one of the biggest miscarriages of justice ever heard of when it comes to a political corruption issue. There's certainly a lot of miscarriages of justice that we've seen in the criminal justice system in terms of, you know, people who've been wrongfully convicted and more. But in terms of like an actual investigation of a politician, this DA coming in and shutting down this, you know, deep and intensive prosecution where the prosecutor has said, as you pointed out, I think, Nicole, just yesterday or the day before, that there was ample evidence
yeah.
of serious criminal activity by Donald Trump. And because of the change of one person in that DA's office in New York, Trump may get away with some of those crimes. And he's already gotten away with other crimes. And so we're really left with this Justice Department to do something to vindicate the rule of law. And that's why I have some hope, perhaps as Marcy Wheeler does, that that Merrick Garland will do justice in this case, because, you know, he is devoted to this notion of the rule of law. So hopefully he will not allow Donald Trump to get away with his crimes. But we are, the clock is running, and it's also the case, as you point out, that one of the reasons the Republicans want the Congress is not just to jam President Biden's agenda, which they already can do with the Senate. It's mm-hmm. because they want the gavel to conduct these, you know, super meritless investigations like they did with Benghazi, spending millions just to try to smear Hillary Clinton, yep. where, you know, they were attacking her for that awful tragedy, you know, in Africa. And yet, you know, as nearly a million Americans have died from COVID, these same Republican House members who were, you know, up in arms over that awful tragedy have basically aided and abetted the effort to make it harder to protect the American people from this deadly disease.
Yeah.
So they don't really care about, in my view, personally, some of these leaders like Jim Jordan. I'll say this in my personal capacity. He doesn't really care about other people dying. He just cares about scoring political points. That's who he is. He's basically, you know, Trump's, you know, boxer in the ring. And to have him come back to power, I would just say personally, not for my organization, but just right. personally, it would be appalling to see him have greater power.
Oh, my God. And there, and if they take back control of the House, he could be speaker.
Yeah.
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 That
Terrible.
Let that sink Terrible. In for a second. Jim Jordan, who you should spell G-Y-M, people know why, he could be speaker because what's his name? Kevin McCarthy.
Yep.
Try as he might to, you know, kiss up to Trump in any way conceivable, if their game plan plays out, Kevin McCarthy is not part of the plan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jim Jordan is auditioning all the time
yep.
for the job of, you know, whatever Trump wants him to do, basically. He'll say anything. He'll do anything. In that sense, he's a lot like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, who there's no low below, you know, below, there's no bar that they won't sink below
right.
in order to advance their own personal political agenda, their own ambition, their just grotesque willingness to distort the facts and to disregard the law while they sort of try to wrap themselves in the flag. It really, again, speaking personally, it's really sad to me as an American, as an ordinary citizen, to see people of such such lack of integrity.
Oh, it's horrible.
Know, such lack of devotion to American principles, like the principle of our, you know, democracy, that we honor elections when every single Secretary of State and state official has certified those elections
yep.
as valid. You know, that these members of Congress who've taken an oath to defend the Constitution, to uphold the Constitution, would basically violate that oath and join league with the Trump administration's effort to subvert our very democracy. I mean, I am just personally horrified and appalled.
Right. You would never think that this could ever happen here. Right. And then, you know, somebody in the chat room just said Alvin Bragg is the DA's name in New York who took over. Cy Vance retired and Alvin Bragg came in. And he's like, I'm going to continue this prosecution. I'm right there. And now all of a sudden he starts returning evidence to, you know, basically saying
yep.
the thing is over. And when he's questioned, he's like, the investigation hasn't ended. So you can't even question him on it because he said it's an ongoing investigation. I think Trump got to him. Do you think I'm off base?
Well, I have to say that as speaking just as an outside observer,
yes.
it seems very suspicious that you would have someone who would come in and behave in this way. It seems very troubling to me. I think a prudent person who comes into a new job like that, the head of a prosecutorial office, would actually, you know, take a lot more time to understand the cases that the team that works for him, works for that office, works for the people, have been the cases they've been looking at. And he seems to have come in, although, you know, some say he has a reputation for being fair, this doesn't seem like a very fair action at all.
No.
To come in and basically set aside months and months of intense building of this case where there's, you know, according to the lead prosecutor, plain evidence of criminality that they developed and say that there's not sufficient evidence, that just seems very suspicious. You know, I wonder what will happen looking back 5-10 years from now on, you know, his reputation and on that office. But this decision to shut down that investigation is, I think, just fundamentally at odds with, you know, normal, sort of the normal way a prosecutor's office operates.
Yeah. So much is just it's just wrong. Just it's so fishy. Just doesn't make sense. The pieces don't fit together. And then now they're saying Letitia James's case may be in trouble because I don't know if it's a like a snowball effect because of what's happening in New York City. Is that going to affect her case?
It's not clear. You know, obviously there have been a number of cooperating agreements that have been reported in the news in terms of the federal prosecutors, the prosecutors working for the special counsel, the offices in the jurisdictions like the Southern District of New York, the state jurisdiction like for the Attorney General of New York. A lot of these cases are, or work, it sounds like from the news reports, were somewhat interdependent, although also independent.
Right.
So it's not clear, but losing this focal area in terms of the jurisdiction of that New York District Attorney's office, like that is, I think, a substantial loss because of all the evidence that's been accumulated. And if it's being returned to the Trump Organization, you know, that is, you know, a very other offices. I'm not privy to that. And again, I don't know the DA there, and I don't know his motives. You know, and I know his reputation from before now is not that he's, you know, in Trump's pocket,
right.
But it certainly seems suspicious to me as an outsider that someone would take such precipitous action in the face of evidence that the prosecutors, you know, have talked, at least one of the prosecutors has talked about expressly this week.
Right. Now, do you know who he answers to? Does he answer to the mayor of New York, or does he answer to the New York State Attorney General?
I don't think he answers to the New York State Attorney General. Ultimately, I think he answers to the political powers within New York. But I know that there are agreements. There have been agreements over time between that office and the AG's office in terms of jurisdiction. There are some things that are clear by statute. There are other things that are more by practice or agreement. I'm pretty certain that the Attorney General has no say over who gets that position of District Attorney of New York.
Wow. This whole thing, there's so many pieces being juggled. It's like different plates spinning, and they're all about to fall. And some of them should fall. You know, this has been a hell of a week. Lisa Graves, I know you've been incredibly busy. I can't thank you enough for joining us. Your expertise is always so appreciated. I could just pick your brain for hours. I could keep going, but we're already in overtime.
Thanks, weekend. Nicole.
So have a wonderful weekend. How do people subscribe to the Substack newsletter?
If they go to Substack and go look for True North Research, you'll find us. You can also go see us on our website and sign up from there, truenorthresearch.org. We're also on Twitter. We're It's True North.
Yep.
And we'll have some more material coming on Jenny Thomas next week, so stay
tuned.
Oh,
yeah. All right. Well, you may have to come back and come back for the whole hour because I packed so much into it. Okay, got it. I will be in touch. Lisa, you're the best. Thank you so much. All right, have a great weekend.
Thanks.
You take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right. Lisa Graves, she is such a treasure. I'm so lucky to know her and that she comes on the show because what a wealth of information we get from her. I hope you appreciate that, too. All right. As I said, we are in overtime. I'm going to have to edit this so all of Lisa's stuff makes it in this segment, so it will air Progressive Voices at progressivevoices.com. If you don't have the app, but you should get the app. Runs my show a lot on the weekends, so it'll be in the library that they can pick from. And with that, have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Hopefully, I'll go see Indigo Girls tonight. Who knows? Either way, we'll be back Monday. I don't think I have anything booked for next week. Well, I do. I have a special treat on Friday. So the Oscars are this weekend. The Grammys are next weekend. And I'll tell you right now, next Friday, we have a guest. We're going to do a Music Friday with somebody who is Grammy nominated. She's up for a Grammy this year. She was up for a Grammy 10 years ago. And I don't know who, but there was like, she wasn't with a label or anything. And they tried to just, you know, erase her. So it'll be an interesting story, I promise you. And we'll have some music too. Okay, with that, I'll leave you with the news and wish you a very, very happy weekend. Enjoy it. I'll see you Monday. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye-bye. And here we go.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Big breaking news Thursday night from the Washington Post's Bob Woodward and CBS News' Robert Costa. A series of 29 text messages between Ginny Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, and White House Chief of Staff under the former guy, Mark Meadows. In those texts, Thomas repeatedly pressed Meadows to pursue unrelenting efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election in the critical weeks following the vote. The messages show for the first time how Ginny Thomas used her access to Trump's inner circle to push Trump and guide his strategy to overturn the election results. One of Thomas's main goals was for lawyer Sidney Powell to be, quote, the lead and the face of Trump's legal team. I'm not kidding. On November 19th, she texted Meadows, quote, Mark, don't want to wake you. Sounds like Sidney and her team are getting inundated with evidence of fraud. Make a plan, release the Kraken, and save us from the left taking America down. Oh, my goodness. In her November 5th message to Meadows, Thomas quoted something that had been circulating on right-wing websites, quote, Biden crime family and ballot fraud co-conspirators, in parentheses, elected officials, bureaucrats, social media censorship mongers, fake stream media reporters, etc., are being arrested and detained for ballot fraud right now and over coming days and will be living in barges off Gitmo to face military tribunals for sedition. Yeah, it went on like that. Again, this is the wife of a sitting Supreme Court justice. Oh, and the one message she sent after January 6th, she wrote, quote, We are living through what feels like the end of America. Most of us are disgusted with the vice president and are in listening mode to see where to fight with our teams. Justice Thomas remains hospitalized for over a week after early reports said it was flu-like symptoms and he'd be out in a day. Meanwhile, critics are demanding that Thomas step down, and if he doesn't, that perhaps he should be impeached over his wife's involvement in efforts to overturn the election. The January 6th committee is also considering whether to recommend the two former advisors to Trump, Dan Scavino and Peter Navarro, be held in contempt for not cooperating with its investigation and to refer them to the Justice Department for possible prosecution. Then again, we're still waiting to hear on Mark Meadows' contempt prosecution. To be continued. So President Joe Biden travels to Poland on Friday, his second stop on a European trip to deal with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. While in Poland, the president will visit U.S. troops not far from the border with Ukraine before he heads to Warsaw to meet with President Duda, Ukrainian refugees, and deliver an address on Saturday. Biden had a busy day in Brussels on Thursday, first meeting with NATO, then the European Council and G7 leaders. By the end of the day, they'd announced a new set of sanctions and warned Putin against using chemical weapons in Ukraine. The U.S. also announced that we'll accept 100,000 refugees. Ukraine reiterated its need for additional military assistance, saying it needs 1,000 missiles a day. The administration has also pledged an additional $1 billion in humanitarian aid. Biden also said he supported forcing Russia to leave the G20, which represents the world's largest economies. If the group's members don't agree, Biden said that Ukraine should be invited to participate. Confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson finally wrapped up Thursday. Jackson spoke about her judicial experience and addressed the historic nature of her nomination, which would make her the first Black female Supreme Court justice. The hearing was an example of the worst of our political system. Lots of contentious moments of abusive questioning by Republicans. Senators Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, and Marsha Blackburn were among a group of Republicans who were grandstanding, probably to get clips for their campaign ads. On the other hand, New Jersey Democratic Senator Cory Booker delivered a moving speech that brought tears to the nominee and to many watching. The Senate Judiciary Committee will vote on Judge Jackson's nomination on Monday, April 4th. Then it goes to the full Senate for a final vote. And if you need a good reason to confirm Ketanji Brown Jackson and more like her, well, the Arizona House on Thursday voted to outlaw abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. bringing the legislature in line with a growing number of Republican-led states passing aggressive anti-abortion measures. Arizona State Senate had already passed the bill, which is very similar to the Missouri law currently being considered by the Supreme Court. The bill now makes its way to Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, an abortion opponent who is expected to sign it into law. This bill, by the way, contains no exceptions for rape, incest, or medical emergency. Lovely. And that followed by a day, the governor of Idaho signing a ban there on abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. Something is seriously wrong here. And here's an example of that. A federal jury on Thursday found Congressman Jeff Fortenberry, Republican from Nebraska, guilty of three felonies for lying to and misleading the FBI about his knowledge of campaign donations made with funds from a foreign national. The jury deliberated less than 3 hours. Fortenberry faces a possible prison sentence of up to 5 years on each count, as well as fines. But the Omaha World Herald reports that Fortenberry does not have to give up his seat in Congress. Federal law requires members of Congress to give up their seats only for crimes that are tied to treason. Just letting that sink in for a second. And finally, the 94th Academy Awards take place Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern on ABC. I'm on Team Coda for Best Picture. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.